There will.
Oh, oh!
At the Farm Science Review in London, Ohio. We'll talk biologicals, carbon markets, and get into the details of what it takes to make an average growing season in Ohio.
Live from the Farm Science Review in London, Ohio, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with Rob McClelland from Meristem Crop Performance. Then it's Cameron Camfield from the Stratovation Group. Then Sean Rittinger of the Stoutsville Seed Shed and Mike Estat from OSU. Later, Aaron Wilson, Ag Weather and Climate Field Specialist from OSU. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Grovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Laurie.
Basically, what that means is if you are here at the show, you're going to get on the show today.
Yeah.
You're going to get on AgriTalk.
Yeah.
That's basically what it means.
Come on down, everybody. Hello, Ohio. Woo-hoo!
Yeah, man. It is beautiful out here, dude. We've got... The wind is a little gusty here this morning. It's a little chilly,
right.
Just 63 degrees, but it is that time of the year. We've had some guys come up and say, hey, we're not quite harvesting yet, but we're really close. Looks like next week they're going to get a good start out this direction. But here we are at the 60th annual Farm Science Review. It's great to be out here in London. Thank you so much to Meristem Crop Performance for making it possible for us to make the trip over here to London and be part of the big show. Really appreciate it. All right. Davis, it was an uneventful trip over here. That was a good thing.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. So everything's good to go. Good to go, man. Let's go ahead and fire things up. Get to the news. What do you got?
Well, Chip, as expected, the Federal Open Market Committee raised its target Fed funds rate another 75 basis points to between 3% and 3.25%. This the third consecutive 75-point hike. The vote, unanimous. The forward guidance on its median economic projections show rates could rise another 125 basis points this year, and higher than that in 2023.
Yeah, you know, Davis, we keep talking about just how far they're going to push it. Are they going to push it higher quickly or move it higher and then hold it at that level for a long period of time to get on top of inflation? They've still got work to do to get on top of inflation, so I don't think they're done yet.
Well, U.S. banks, including J.P. Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, and Bank of America, are threatening to walk out of the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero for fear of being sued over the failure to hit decarbonization requirements. Meanwhile, Britain has lifted its 2019 moratorium on fracking as the nation looks to combat an ongoing energy shortage and surging consumer energy bills. A little bit of pushback on the climate stuff, Chip.
Well, yeah, and it's here we are. You got to prove it, right? You got to prove that some of this stuff can be done. You can't just say, this is where we're going. You've got to make a decision on how you're going to get there and then show some progress that it's actually happening.
Well, according to the National Association of Realtors, U.S. home sales declined for a seventh consecutive month in August, the longest stretch since 2007. The number of previously owned homes sold in August was down 19.9% from year ago to its lowest level since May 2020. Economists expect further declines in the coming months, given mortgage rates' recent climb above 6% for the first time since 2008. President Biden announced $2.9 billion in fresh U.S. government assistance to address global food insecurity during his speech Wednesday to the United Nations General Assembly. The new money comes on top of $6.9 billion to address food security the U.S. has already committed this year.
You know, it's one of those issues that we continue to monitor very closely, and we're looking for those hot spots to pop up around the world where there might be some vulnerabilities on food supplies. So it's happening and it needs to be addressed. There's no doubt about it.
USDA will distribute $502 million to communities in 20 states in the latest round of funding designed to upgrade broadband access in rural areas struggling with upload and download speeds so slow they risk being left behind other Americans.
You know, $502 million. It wasn't that long ago that we would have heard $502 million and been like freaked out over the amount of money being spent on it. Now you hear $502 million, it's like, why not a billion? What you know, what are we missing out on?
It's nowhere near a trillion. It's chump change, right?
Yeah.
Well, China said the U.S. Inflation Reduction Act is suspected of violating World Trade Organization rules and says it will adopt measures to safeguard its rights. Thus, according to the Chinese Commerce Ministry, the new law eliminates federal tax credits for electric vehicles made outside of North America. The U.S. House has passed its version of the legislation to overhaul the Electoral Count Act. 9 Republicans voted for the bill that seeks to prevent efforts to overturn U.S. elections. A package of policing and public safety bills is headed for House votes today following closed-door negotiations. The 4 bills in the package include grants for police training and recruitment, promoting the deployment of mental health professionals, funding to enhance community violence intervention, and funding for technology investments. The package reportedly lacks support from the GOP. And finally, chip protests are growing in Iran over the death in police custody of a 22-year-old woman who was arrested and accused of violating a headscarf law. Though fiercest in Iran's Kurdish region, the protests have also spread to Tehran, the capital, and to some 50 cities and towns across Iran. At least 7 deaths have been reported, Chip.
Yeah, some of the video coverage of there as well. I mean, the protesters taking on the police, Davis.
Yep.
It's it is a hot spot situation in Iran right now, no question about it. All right, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you again soon. Let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Chip. How are you?
Doing real fine. I'm really feeling good about this latest survey about consumer attitudes toward U.S. beef.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about how well beef demand has held up, even as inflation has pushed retail prices higher. And now we have some research that tells us beef is just really popular. Maiden Marketing has consumer research that says 72% of beef-eating Americans cannot imagine giving up beef. That's really positive, Chip.
And that's really good.
62% of them say they purchase premium products. USDA Choice, USDA Prime, maybe a certified Angus beef would fall into that category. So Maiden Marketing is an agency that's dedicated to meat industry clients like retailers and processors. So they do this research for the people that we have that are processing and selling our product. So beyond that, 88% of consumers buy at least some conventional product, Chip. But yep. 68% of them say they purchase beef with a production claim, such as a natural or grass-fed, maybe not all the time, but at least some of the time. So basically what they're, basically what we're finding is that beef's really popular and those claims, sustainable, grass-fed, natural, at least resonate with a majority of our customers.
Well, yeah, and it also means we've got a consumer base out there that's is going to be a loyal consumer base is what it sounds like, Greg, and that's exactly what we need. Good
Absolutely.
Stuff, buddy. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, that's Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. We are live at the Farm Science Review in London, Ohio. We're going to be back. Talk with the guys from Meristem next here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Rumensin. Rumensin's quality, consistency, and efficiency make it the right choice for your cattle operation. Rumensin, trusted by generations. When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. We are live at the Farm Science Review. Thank you to Meristem Crop Performance for making it possible for us to make the trip over here to London. And speaking of Meristem, let's go ahead and make time for this industry spotlight. Joining us now is Rob McClelland. He is the president of Meristem Crop Performance. Rob, it's good to see you again. How are you?
Chips, good to see you. Thanks for being here today. We're glad to have you in Ohio.
Glad to be here. Glad to be here. Tell me about Meristem.
Well, you know, Meristem, we've been out here for a number of years now, and we've set out to help farmers find new pathways to maybe buy a little better on crop inputs and maybe find a way for new technologies to get to the farm gate a little faster.
Okay, and let's talk about getting those new farm technologies into the field in a better way. Yeah. You've got a couple of new delivery platforms.
Chip, we do. The team here at Meristem has had a little experience in crop production agriculture over the last few decades, and one of the things that's happening, it's never been a more exciting time to be in agriculture.
Yeah.
The greatest industry on the earth. The U.S. farmer is probably the most ideal production engine ever created.
Yep.
You know, we like to talk about our goal is to help farmers do more with less. We got to compete against the world stage. Guys got to produce the best quality product for the lowest possible cost. That's just math.
Yep.
So, you know, what can we do to create real productivity gain? Really take out steps, take out hauling water, taking out different things. And also, these guys, these farmers I'm with out here across the country, I've been in 22 states in the last 11 days.
Yeah.
Trying to see everybody growing this business. And one thing comes up every time, labor, time.
Yep.
I can't get enough done. It's hard to find people. All these things you've talked about on the show leading into that.
Yep.
They also tell us about how they really just have to find ways to get planting done fast. These guys are pushing populations. Heck, they're the smartest people I've ever dealt with.
Right.
And when we've kind of looked at some ways we could maybe fit in with these operations, we found out through some really smart people we were able to get connected with that talc and graphite, fluency agents for seed, turns out, Chip, they are the best way to deliver certain microbes to the soil.
Really?
Yeah. I want to give all the credit to a farmer. A farmer named Steve Johnson out of Page, North Dakota, started a company called Talc USA, and he started founding a grind. He found stuff from America, from the U.S., and he found a way to really build the premier seed fluency. Every farmer needs it. It helps. These farmers want to go fast.
Yep.
They don't have a lot of time. They want to get it in 7 to 9 days. So he's found out that with all this research, billions and billions around the world, guys putting in these new microbes, that by gosh, talc and graphite's the way to do it. But we also grew up and we're part of the Brandt family, and in our background is we know we want zinc on the seed.
Right.
But you know, get zinc near these microbes that these coming out, it's not good on them.
Okay.
So we've launched here today, and we've launched in the last couple of days a new technology, a patent-pended technology called the BioCapsule.
Okay.
And this BioCapsule is a way to basically keep technology out of the seed fluency and then deploy it right before planting, and we can help farmers. We know these biologicals work. We've seen it in the lab. It's great ways to build big roots.
Right. Right.
Help nitrogen get fixed, help solubilize nutrients. And that's one of the things we've launched. It's called Revline Hopper Throttle with BioCapsule, and we're excited to show folks about it here at the Farm Science Review.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I mean, I like the way that you started there for sure, Rob. Anything that can make the guys more efficient, make them quicker, smoother, faster at what they're doing out there, the better it works. And it looks like this new delivery system is really exactly what they're looking for in many cases.
Well, the other piece is these farmers that we talk to, and Dr. Fred Below is been a guy a lot of us follow.
Oh.
I mean, he's the godfather, you know.
That's right.
And Dr. Below started looking at these biologicals, and he's helping us all learn.
Yeah.
And he's actually got PhDs he's putting out of his program in biologicals.
Exactly.
Dr. Connor Sybil, these guys are smart kids.
Yeah.
They look really young to me, Chip. But anyway, they're helping us along. And Dr. Below actually has done a lot of research, and he's found out that in a 200 bushel corn crop, you're going to produce about 4.5 tons of stover residue.
Yep.
And this stover is gold to these farmers, and they know it. And then you got these seed companies like Access, and all these great hybrids they're pushing populations, and they're big old, you know, they look like tree trunks coming out of the ground.
Yep.
So we've also used a biological carrier called Microbilize to pick microbes to eat this stuff up so they can plant faster.
Right.
So they go
right
together.
Gotcha. It's a whole package.
It is.
Good stuff, Rob. Thank you so much, buddy.
Thank you, Chip.
Appreciate it. That is Rob McClelland. McClelland. He is the president of Meristem Crop Performance. And these biologicals, all the rage. I'll say it. They're all the rage in what guys are looking at. And with the level of profitability that we are seeing, we've gone from a time when it was, let's go ahead and give that a shot. And then we tightened up our margins a little bit. So now the product's got to prove itself. There is no question about that. And let's talk about that with Cam Camfield. He is the founder and CEO of Strativation Group. Cam, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Glad you're here. Tell me about Strativation Group.
Yeah, so we are a Columbus-based firm. We provide research, consulting, and advertising to folks in the agri-food value chain. So we spend a lot of time talking to farmers and learning from those folks.
Okay. This report that you are putting together, and it's going to be an annual report going forward?
That's correct, sir.
Okay. It is called Biologicals, Farmer Value Perception and Potential. Answering a lot of questions with this report.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead. Tell me
about
it.
Yeah, so what we found, there's obviously a lot of energy in this space and a lot of renewed excitement, but we found that there was not a lot of folks really listening to the farmers' perceptions around this, because to your point, it's got to work, and there are some folks who maybe haven't always had luck with all of these. And so we're really setting out. It's a farmer-focused study, and we're really grateful. We've got some great partners. We've partnered with the Ag Retailers Association, the Fertilizer Institute, and DCLRS to bring this to market, and we're really going at it. All of the major row crop production states. We're learning from farmers through direct interviews and then a survey to wrap it up. And again, like you noted, it's annual, so hopefully we can track how these trends change over time and we learn what it's going to take to get these things adopted.
So is it just one particular product that you're looking at, or are you looking at a wide array of products?
The whole biological products and all of its subparts. Yes, sir.
Thank God, because there's so many of them out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think just the volume and the decision-making process might be holding some back from using them.
Absolutely. Yeah, we would see the same. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of folks wanting to learn. But it's kind of the Wild West in a lot of regards. So we're hoping this data can provide a little bit of clarity and help us bring them to the American farmer easier and better.
What kind of data is going to be included in the report?
Yeah, so it's a first of its kind. We're starting with a bunch of qualitative interviews, one-on-one interviews, kind of just like this, so that way we can really learn from the farmer, make sure we're understanding the why and the context of their operation. So we've been doing that all summer. We're going to take a pause during harvest because you know how that goes. And then after harvest, we're going to complete a statistically valid study, a survey to make sure that we can understand how these perceptions vary by state, by commodity type, by product type, and the like. So that's what we'll be pulling out this year is those two bodies of work.
Okay. Who is this report going to benefit the most?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say ag retailers, manufacturers, and anyone else that has a vested interest in this market.
The ag retailer side of it. When you mentioned that ARA is a partner in Strativation, the level of interest from the retailers out there has got to be off the charts, because this is something that the benefits seem to be there, and it seems to be a fairly... I don't want to say simple process to use it or to use the biologicals, but in matter of fact, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the retailers got to be really excited about this.
Absolutely. They are, and they're going to be critical to this whole process. I mean, that's a trusted relationship for the American farmer. Right. And so, we definitely think they have a critical role in this. That's why we're thrilled to have their partnership.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. Okay. So the opportunities going forward, what do you see for the space?
Oh, it's we've never had more pull from the market on anything. So in our space, we started in row crop this year. We will probably launch a specialty sister report for the Smile States here next year. And then we're also looking at a policy stint. I will say it seems like the future is bright for biologicals, and we're thrilled to be a part of the conversation.
Okay. What kind of information are they demanding the most, whether it be a farmer or a retailer? Are they just looking for proof that it works?
I think a lot of farmers are looking at proof and then the value. There's still the ROI side.
Yep.
So whether that's
Absolutely.
The cost or are we going to get the yield boost? Are we going to get the productivity boost to offset these? That is still very top of mind for a lot of these farmers.
It's got to come right at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, I'm willing to use this stuff. It's going to make me more productive out in the field. But if I can't make enough money to pay for it, I'm not going to use it.
Spot on.
Obviously. So that return on investment, very important. How do we get a hold of the report?
Absolutely. So you can reach out to me directly, Cam, at StratovationGroup.com. Our website, StratovationGroup.com/biologicals. You can learn all about it. And we're taking a number of sponsor partners. We've got, it's an industry collaboration event. So we've got folks of all sizes. We've got 9 different partners supporting the effort outside of TFI and ARA and those folks. And so really hoping to rise the tide for the whole industry and listen to farmers first. So.
Fantastic. Good stuff, Cam. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
All right. That's Cam Camfield. He is the founder and CEO of Strativation Group. You can get a hold of him and get a hold of the report, Biologicals, Farmer Value, Perception, and Potential. We'll be back from FSR next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, it's a little windy out here in Ohio. They're getting ready to start harvest probably next week out here. What's going on in the markets?
Well, Chip, we've got a little bit of a firmer tone here mid-morning in wheat and corn, but that doesn't really tell the whole story because it's been two-sided trade that happened overnight. It continued on through morning trade here, and just happens to be a firmer tone at the moment. But all this is happening in the face of strong gains in the U.S. dollar, which pushed to new 20-year highs overnight. In reaction to the Fed action and the expectation that the Fed is going to remain aggressive in its fight against inflation moving forward. So remain supportive of the greenback, but yet we're seeing a little bit of buyer interest. Weekly export sales,
Yeah. Four
across the board. Ooh. For corn, soybeans, and wheat. But we did have some daily corn sales, so that's helping a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, it's too bad that we didn't get better demand show up in that export sales report. Take us over to the livestock trade. What's happening there?
Well, cattle market, it's under some pressure here. Feeder cattle, because of the strength in corn, they're facing moderate to heavy pressure, and I'll call it moderate pressure in live cattle futures so far this morning. But really, that sell-off in the feeder cattle market is quite pronounced, given that the corn market is just slightly higher at the moment. But we're just really struggling to find buyers right now in feeder cattle, and live cattle are waiting on the cash market to get going.
Okay. All right. And that hog market, it's been narrowing the spread. Is it getting any closer?
So the October and December contracts trading a little bit to the upside. Some of the far-deferred contracts are a little bit weaker this morning.
Gotcha. Good stuff. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. I don't know what you're thinking! So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. We're live at the Farm Science Review out in London, Ohio. It's a windy, chilly day out here in Ohio. But thank you so much to Meristem Crop Performance for making it possible for us to get out here. And speaking of that, let's make time for this industry spotlight. Joining us now is Sean Rittinger. He is an Ohio farmer, and he's the owner of Stoutsville Seed Shed. Tell me about the seed shed, Sean.
Sure, Chip.
let's sell some seashells down by the seashore while we're at it.
You know how many times I get that? If I would have known that, what I've named the business, I'd have named it something different. But, hey, it's catchy, and everybody talks about it, and I'd rather be talking about me than somebody else. So that's the way we like it.
Yeah, tell me about it real quick.
We started Stoutsville Seed Shed back in 2015. I was a corporate employee for several seed companies, and we decided to go on our own in the seed business with the Channel brand, which is a brand I helped launch in the state in 2009. The corporate structure kind of changed, and I'm a farm gate guy.
Yeah.
Belt buckle to belt buckle with growers is what I love to do.
Gotcha.
And helping them be successful. Helps us be successful, and that's kind of brought us to our journey with Meristem.
Okay, so one of the issues that farmers and you have had to deal with over the years is residue management.
Sure.
And there's a product from Meristem called Excavator that really, it was residue management that first got your attention with Excavator, right?
Right. right? I talked to these guys about, you know, obviously bringing this product into our portfolio, and it's one of these things that we, you know, we like to test everything on our farm before we start introducing it to our customers. So we do some corn after corn in our operation, as well as corn after soybeans. Excavator, we applied it with our fall herbicide last fall. We put it on pretty late, so I wasn't sure that we were going to see benefits, but actually went on the week of Thanksgiving, you know, and it did everything I expected it to do. To visually walking through the field, I mean, can't see a lot, but you kick those stalks and they just disintegrate.
Yeah,
we did some fall tillage, or actually winter tillage this year, just the way the season worked out. And it was amazing how the residue managed through the plow and the corn after corn acres way better than it ever has before. So we knew it was doing the job. You split the stalks, there's nothing left in there but the pith. And then I guess the sideline benefit of that product is, you know, we're getting some nutrient release that, you know, we bought it as a stock digester product,
right,
or biomass digester. We weren't really thinking about the N, P, and K that was going to be released into the soil additionally faster than normal. So, you know, that's kind of a side benefit to the product.
And it's showing up in your crop this year, you were saying.
Right, right. Yeah. We've Meristem did a great job, got a bunch of interns out, pulled soil samples side by sides that we had with our growers and ourselves, and we're seeing good bumps in P and K, and
all right,
and, pretty good deal.
All right, Sean, it's good to see you again, man.
Hey, good seeing you.
All right, Sean Rittinger, he is an Ohio farmer and owner of Stoutsville Seed Shed. All right, up next, we're going to have a conversation with Mike Erstad from Ohio State University, and Mike is presenting here at Farm Science Review, of course, which is part of Ohio State University, is the host of Farm Science Review. And Mike, welcome. It's good to talk with you again.
Nice to be here.
It's good to see you. Good to see you. Now, the title of your program, Carbon Credit Programs, Opportunity or Hype, that is aptly named because I think everybody is wondering, is there opportunity or is it a hype?
I would guess the answer is it's a lot of both. Yeah. I saw the big blue ball down here across the way, and that's the first time we've had that presence here. Well, I think that company had been here last year. But of course, they're out on the farm show circuit with you. And, there's a lot of opportunity. I've had an opportunity over the last since last review to do a lot of meetings with growers around the state of Ohio. And, again, there's still a lot of confusion. There's a lot of misinformation out there. And so my role as an extension educator and teaming with Aaron Wilson, who's in our climatologist, to go out and just help people understand the terminology and what qualifies, what doesn't qualify. But right now it is, I saw one of the CEOs of Truterra, one of their brand markers, said this is going to be a messy place for the next couple years.
And I think ultimately we're going to end up where we're going to end up with a carbon market of some sort, aren't we?
There will. The previous one from years back, Carbon Corp, it just didn't have any market. There wasn't no demand. I think those credits traded at $20 and went to 10 cents.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you it's not going to happen this way this time around, because private industry, financiers, insurance companies, corporate boards with their environmental social governance policies, they're driving it this time. USDA threw some gasoline on the fire here in the last couple weeks, but it's not going away.
When you said ESG right there, it just makes me shiver, Mike, because the process of proving what you're doing, it's going to have to happen.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot of growers and people I respect, they look at these programs, and especially if you look at, there's an offset market that just, you know, allows emitters to continue to emit. And then there's what we call this insert market, the scope 3 emissions, where companies look at their supply chain all the way down to the farm gate, and how do we get everybody in that supply chain to reduce their carbon footprint.
Right.
And we have to incentivize or create a premium to those growers to do things different.
That is the key. I was at a meeting, farm meeting the other night, and the conversation was, okay, well, I'm out here no-tilling. I've been doing it for years.
Oh, yeah.
If I start selling my carbon credits to somebody else, what changes? Nothing. And I go, well, that's the problem.
Yeah, well, the whole term additionality.
And
whether you talk, I don't care who you talk to, they're not buying old carbon. Yep. They want new carbon. And but there are places, I think, for those people that have been conservation-minded.
Legacy.
It's right. Yeah. I think, these scope three, these supply chain, there's going to be opportunities for them to incorporate a cover crop to manage nitrogen different. If you're a livestock producer, I talked to a livestock producer yesterday, is from Missouri, building a cattle feed lot. He's got solar panels on the roof. He's put this California Emission Board is putting a digester on his farm. They're going to put it back onto the grid and send the electricity to California. It is the craziest thing.
That is fantastic. You know, and when we talk about the guys that have been using some of these practices for a while, I was of the opinion we need to do something for those guys so that they can participate.
Sure.
But they're the innovators. They're right out there doing it first. If we're going to go to the next level, those are the guys that are going to figure out that next level.
I tell them to be patient. And I tell every farmer first, if you're considering this, do it for the reason. Ignore the amount of the credit. Do it because it fits your whole farm plan.
Yes.
Look at all the other benefits, soil quality, water quality, wildlife enhancement. There are a lot of other things out there that these practices they're asking you to do benefits you. I've heard a little bit of rumbling, and we've had discussion with some of our academics. We have a carbon footprint team. We think in the next, in a period of time, if the uptake isn't, and to reward those people, there may be in the future a program where maybe the government will rent their carbon to keep them from emitting it.
Okay. So I have to look at things critically.
Okay.
All right. The guys that are participating now, we're going to make the change anyway.
Yeah.
The funds, the payment, the carbon credit payment available isn't pulling anybody over to make a production change yet, right?
I think last year Indigo's program was $25 a metric ton. Yeah. I think it's 30 this year. And when you start unwrapping the Inflation Reduction Act, the climate portion of that was almost $400 billion. If you read closely in the language, and if you, I know you're in Iowa a lot. Yep. I was in Iowa last year for a while. This whole issue of carbon capture and storage, and we know about pipelines, the Navigator and the Carbon Summit and the Wolf Ridge. There is subsidies for carbon capture and storage amount to about $85 a ton. Now, I'm asking myself, if a farmer can do the same thing, and we're asking farmers to capture and store it, I say maybe the market is a little under where it should be.
Yeah. You start talking 80, 85 bucks a ton, then all of a sudden guys are thinking, all right, let's see if it's
real
work.
Money.
Let's see if it'll work.
You know, I hear the question, $25 a ton, and it cost me $40 an acre to put out this cover crop. Where does that make economic sense? Yeah.
Right.
And I tell growers, I've been telling growers, put one field in. There's performance-based programs, the Nutrients, the Cargills. There's numerous ones that will pay you on an annual basis.
Right.
It's not big money, but I think it's getting them introduced to it.
Okay. We talk all the time about the sellers, the carbon credit sellers. What about the buyers? There's plenty of buyers to go around, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. The market's big. They've ran out of trees, Chip. I mean, when we look at the carbon credit market, we saw the big Exxons and the Mobils and the Shells and the Googles, and all those people were buying trees, carbon. Yeah. And so, we're running out of big tree projects. Now the next look is to Midwest agriculture.
There's going to be a market. We've already settled on that. We settled on that early in the conversation. It's going to be big.
Yeah.
The total dollars in this thing is going to be impressive.
All right, the number that I've heard, when you look worldwide, within the next 30 to 40 years, it's estimated that there'll be $17 trillion spent toward climate change. $17
trillion. You might as well be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And with all the ESG that's happening, this is being involved in a carbon sequestration program is a way to get all the information in place so that you can answer the questions when they are asked.
I keep trying to help farmers understand that this is a carrot, and we've had a lot of carrots in agriculture. This is a really big carrot.
Yeah.
You don't have to agree or disagree whether climate change is real, whether you don't have to agree to that. You just understand that there's a lot of money being put forth that allow you to maybe change your farming operation for the betterment of the farming operation itself.
We got 15 seconds. It's going to look a lot different in 2 years, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, a lot different in two years.
Mike, it's good to talk with you again. Thank you so much. That is Mike Erstad, Ag and Natural Resources Department there at Ohio State. We're going to talk about the Ohio growing season next, right here on AgriTalk.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. We are in London, Ohio at the Farm Science Review and talking with some of the fine people at Ohio State University. Joining us right now, Aaron Wilson. He is an assistant professor, ag weather and climate field specialist. Aaron, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
All right. Dr. Wilson Weather, WX out on Twitter, right?
That's right. Twitter and Facebook as well.
Yep. Very good. Very good. So if you want to follow Aaron, make sure that you do that. It was a weird way to get to average in Ohio this year, dude. Wet early and dry for a period of time in the middle of the season, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly for much of the state, especially central and southern part of Ohio, very wet winter led into a wet spring as well. And so we saw some of those delays, obviously, getting some things in. And then June, right? We had some record heat. You know, we hit a heat index in central Ohio of 115, you know, which is a bit early for us to see those kinds of temperatures. You know, we had about a 10-day period there during the summer where things got pretty dry, and then the faucet turned back on for central Ohio, one of the wettest Julys in parts of central Ohio, for instance, and then stayed dry across the Northeast.
Yeah, that dry period, that came after pollination, right?
Yeah, right. So that the timing wasn't exactly perfect on that,
right?
And certainly things look like it was, hopefully above that trend line for this year, but you know, those 10 days can make a difference. And as we know with weather, it's all about that timing. It's exactly about that time. You get off schedule a little bit in the planting in the spring, and then you get some drier weather at a bad time, and you take a little hit, right?
Yeah,
not terrible.
Yeah. Well, it speeds things up. It speeds up the development of that corn crop, and if you're shortening up the period from pollination to black layer, you're taking away time that those kernels can gain weight.
Yeah, that's right. So we might be able, you know, on one end we're pushing it before black layer in the fall because we're not going to get there. You know, typically we've been seeing later and later black layer dates in terms of frost-free conditions. But you can get those. You know, it's all about that timing. It's all about how that crop develops in the field, and weather makes and breaks every single year.
Absolutely. What kind of trends are you following for the weather patterns right now? What are you looking at? What's driving it?
Yeah, so basically when we look at, we are warming overall, but most of the warming in Ohio and really across much of the central U.S. and southeast United States is mostly wintertime temperatures, springtime temperatures, and in the summer it's the overnight lows. It's the nights where we don't stay above 70, 75 degrees. Our daytime highs have actually cooled a bit compared to the early 20th century. We don't see as many 100-degree days. Now that's tied into the precip and the water side. Because it's warmer, we get more evaporation, we get more water vapor in the atmosphere, and it does two things. It leads to heavier downpours, more extreme weather that we talk about, these 1 in 1,000 year events in places like St. Louis this year, Illinois, Breathitt, Kentucky, you know, Breathitt County, Kentucky.
Yeah.
A lot of moisture can really come down in a short period of time. But it also, because you've got more water vapor in the atmosphere, you've got, you know, strong evaporation, it actually caps the daytime temperatures in the summer. More clouds form, or you get more heat gets absorbed versus escaping the CESPO. But during the day, you've got more moisture, and that keeps the daytime highs from getting warmer.
But then you got that blanket that keeps the nighttime temperatures from dropping.
Correct. So what we call our diurnal temperature change, or the difference between daytime and nighttime, is a lot smaller. Those overnight lows, that's where we've seen the trend during the summertime. And then in the fall, generally we're extending those warmer days out into October and November.
Yeah.
We hit 80 degrees in southwest Ohio last year in November for the first time on record, you know, so those types of situations. So
it's crazy. It's
not straightforward, right? It's not a linear path to these changes. And then, of course, agriculture is all about schedules and all about timing, and it's just it's a much more chaotic way to have to farm these days than it was 50 or 60 years ago.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Yeah,
certainly is. What about this harvest season.
Yeah.
And what about the influence of La Nina on all of this? Because, you know, we talk about the warming. Well, La Nina is cooler than normal sea surface temperatures along the equator. How does that all work together?
Yeah, so there's a lot to unpack there. So first, let's talk about La Nina, El Nino. La Nina just means sea surface temperatures in the tropical Pacific are cooler than average. But because even though it's quite a ways away from the Midwest, it still has impacts on our weather patterns, especially in our wintertime, February, March, and even into April. It tends to cause a shift toward wetter conditions in the Ohio Valley, and then also perhaps more droughty conditions in the western Corn Belt as you get into the summertime, right? Warmer temperatures from central Midwest down in south central plains. That's what we saw this year. This is actually our third year in a row of a La Nina condition. And so that's not happened very often in historical records. We've seen it about four times over the last 150 years. And every year is a little bit different, but generally those are the patterns that we see. The other thing to think about is that this year so far would be the sixth warmest year on record since 1880. That's really? Despite a La Nina condition. So we know our really warm years occur during those El Nino years, but even with the cooler than average sea surface temperatures, this is the sixth warmest. Here in parts of the Midwest, it's not felt like. It's been a very mild July and August here in Ohio, for instance. Very hot conditions, obviously, out west. So when we look at that all together and we look at our forecast coming up, right now over the next, you know, it's cooled down. We've got our first fall weather right on time here over probably the next week or so. It's cooler around the Great Lakes, warming up out in the western part of the Midwest area. That, I think, trend is going to continue for the entire area where we get above average heading really after about the 5th of October. I think we start to enjoy a little bit more warmer than average temperatures. And it looks pretty dry across, you know, northern plains, central plains, the Great Lakes region, and eastern Corn Belt looks drier than average if you look at it from a September to November period. So really, it sounds like a great harvest period.
Man, it sounds like when the bell rings on harvest, it's not there's not going to be many interruptions.
Right. There's always caveats.
Yep.
We got to talk about tropical activity, right, which is always
Fiona.
Something. Fiona, certainly. We had 30 inches of rain in 12 hours in Puerto Rico. That, luckily for the United States, will stay out to sea, probably graze Bermuda here in the next day or so. But we are watching a tropical wave come into the Caribbean. It's going to move into the Gulf.
Okay.
Models are wanting to really crank it up into a big storm, and it can then eclipse that eastern Corn Belt. So we'll have to watch that. But outside of that fly in the ointment, harvest looks good.
You enjoy this, don't you?
I love it. I love it.
I'm a amateur weather bug as well, but I love talking about it and the things that make things happen out there. I can tell you love this, man. Aaron, thank you so much. Appreciate your time today.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
All right, thank you. That is Aaron Wilson. He's the Ag, Weather, and Climate Field Specialist at Ohio State University. Davis, we are wrapping up our morning coverage from Farm Science Review. We're going to be right here this afternoon. We're going to talk more about Meristem. We'll talk about the ag markets, and we're going to talk about farm probability. No question about that. And, of course, big thank you to Meristem for making it possible for us to be out here in London, Ohio. And don't forget, tomorrow morning, we got the free-for-all right here on AgriTalk.